and welcome to the All Japan Women's Destiny podcast. I'm your host, JD. Welcome to another episode as we go through the history of All Japan Women's Professional Wrestling through the classics episodes that you can find on various places of the internet. I vastly encourage to follow along and learn and enjoy the history of this just awesome women's wrestling promotion of the past. This is a spin-off in conjunction with the Red Leaf Retrocast. That is the proper episode where these come from. We hope you enjoy our audio and our discussions over the various wrestlers and the matches in which you go through the ages. If you like what you hear and you want more content, please consider checking out the Patreon. That is patreon.com/redleafretrocast, all one word, where we also cover LLPW, various other women's wrestling promotions of the past, and the project that the whole reason it exists is the Joshi 2010s journey, where we go through coming out of the dark ages of Joshi professional wrestling and really learning and having fun with wrestlers that we're very familiar with to this day to ones that we may have missed out on. I hope you enjoy the audio you're about to hear covering AJW. And if you want more, please, again, consider signing up to the Patreon and leaving us reviews over at iTunes, Spotify, and the like, all your favorite podcasting outlets in which you listen to AJW and the Red Leaf Retrocast. Enjoy. And it's episode 87, All Japan Women Destiny. Here we go, the journey of All Japan Women. We have officially entered 1994, everybody. Very exciting and one of the best years and probably most regarded and well-known years in Joshi Wrestling. Besides, of course, the build-up and the year of 1993 that we just went through, the start of the interpromotional era. This is all building towards the giant Tokyo Dome show near the end of the year. Events that have happened, if you've listened to the last few episodes, is, of course, the now retirement road of one Akira Hokuto. She has more or less officially taken her leave from the company. At this point in time, she's essentially married and moving to Mexico full time. She is scheduled to do a number of dates in CMLL. However, despite wanting to do a straight, old-fashioned retirement show, she is the biggest star in the company. And, well, we're not going out in just one one fell swoop. We got to build toward a big, I believe it's April, Yokohama retirement show. We get a couple more matchups out of her, and eventually we'll get to the point where her supposed official retirement is at the big Tokyo Dome show in the main event against the champion. We'll all get there in time, and on this show that we're covering, she, as in Akira Hokuto, is on commentary, essentially watching her faction members, LCO, Etsuko Mita, and Mima Shimoda, gunning for those tag titles. And the biggest question is, now with Bull Nakano on that reduced schedule that I like making fun of, she is on the road to joining WWF to have some feuds with Medusa and the like, and WWF's eventual short reign relationship with All Japan Women. Akira Hokuto is no longer in the company, more or less, outside of her few appearances in 1994. Is this the year that we start to see Aja Kong get the ace-level push that, if you read old reviews, they claim that once she won the title, that's what she was? Ah, but we hadn't seen that, have we? It's all been Bull Nakano, despite losing the title. She still gets a lot of the spotlight. Akira Hokuto is the biggest star in the industry in terms of women's wrestling and a lot of just wrestling in general in the early 90s. And as we saw throughout 1993, nobody was bigger than Akira Hokuto. And you could argue Shinobu Kandori with what had happened. Aja Kong was constantly, you know, third from the top, maybe even fourth on a couple shows there. Even her inter-promotional title matches. Eagle Sawai, Yumiko Hota, Kansai. Never really got those main events, right? But here we are, we're entering 94. The people that were above her are gone. And before we get into the first big show of the year for AJW, which is the show we're covering here, is the Ota War Champions Legend Show that took place January 24th, 1994, from Ota War, a capacity crowd of 4,350. That's 4,350. We did have our annual back-to-back Cork and Hall shows that AJW is still running. Their January 3rd and January 4th show, kind of coinciding with the New Year's holiday, the Tokyo Dome tradition that New Japan runs, and the like. The January 4th show usually has the biggest match, and then we start a bunch of relationships and storylines that we're building to. So, quickly, at these shows, I was able to find a couple matches in full. Can't really say anything's like crazy go out of your way to watch that you kind of can't picture in your head already. But I'll go through some of these results nonetheless. I mean, there's highlighted clips that you can see, but on January 3rd, we are seeing the rookie rise of one Ri Tamada. Mima Shimoda is the AJW champion, as in the kind of junior title. She defeats Tomoko Watanabe. Mita defeats Suzuka Minami. Bull Nakano defeats Minami Toyota, so Toyota still can't get a victory over her. Toshi Yamada defeats Takako Inoue in the semi-main event. That kind of makes sense. And then the big thing, which is why I'm going through this, is Yumiko Hota, in the main event of this Korakuen Hall on January 3rd, defeats Aja Kong one-on-one, which is the big setup and sort of push, if you will, that Yumiko Hota is more or less kind of attempting to get now that Nakano and Hokuto are out. They need to fill in top roles and have bigger things. And it's almost like an annual attempt tradition to try to get Yumiko Hota over as a main eventer. It's been that way since her start with her Chigusa Nagayo clone gear and style and haircut and everything and the like. But the biggest question is, will she finally be able to deliver in a big-time singles match, which has always been a struggle for her? And on January 4th, much shorter show, but longer, more or less, times and matches. Nakano defeats Ito in 10 minutes, not very good. Kong defeats Suzuka Minami in a pretty decent little match. And then in the main event of that is Minami Toyota and Toshi Yamada, that gold class combo, defeating double Inoue, Kyoko and Takako, 17 minutes. Pretty damn good. This was pretty good. I go like 2 out of 3 recommendation on it. You know, not a must go out of your way match to watch, but you wouldn't be disappointed. The one that's interesting on this card is in the mid card, which was the LCO duo of Mita and Shimoda defeating Saki Asagawa and Yumiko Hota. This 22-minute match sets up essentially starts establishing LCO as a tag team that's getting a push. And this is how they got their Champions League title match to go out and challenge Toyota and Yamada. So the two big teams that won on this Korakuen show will be facing each other for the tag titles. And that's where we lead into this show. A 5-match card with three kind of long set matches to kind of justify why the card is so short. And you can find various short-listed reviews on it. But the first two matches are very straightforward. There's even a little person match there at the start. But there's a Captain's Fall 8-man tag at the start, which is Abe, Shiratori, Miki Yokoe, Numachi, defeat the team of Kumiko Maekawa, Rita Mata, Tomoko Watanabe, and the last person, I believe, is called Miho Ikari. Was not really able to confirm that name, but it's a lot of rookies and sophomores that are really starting out there. It takes quite the match where Shiratori and kind of Rita Mata were kind of the standouts in the match. Tomoko Watanabe is still more or less that same person, just trying a little. She comes off as a very bootleg Kyoko Inoue without the wacky submission game. Take that for what it's will. And then we got a pretty standard tag, which is Suzuka Minami and Takako Inoue against Saki Asagawa and Kaoru Ito. Takako wins this one for a team, very standard. And then we get into the very meat of the card already, the last three matches. And I'm just gonna list these time stamps on these matches, because this is fascinating, and it's you're gonna find out why I didn't really like two of these matches, but really liked one. Bull Nakano defeats Kyoko Inoue 26-34. The tag title match is a 2 out of 3 falls that lasts 39 minutes, and a main event 3WA world title lasts just under 20 minutes. Okay. Yes, 39 minutes. You heard me right. And then a 27-minute match of Bull Nakano defeating Kyoko Inoue. Now, why would they book it like this? Well, the roster is still very much injured. And now with Akira Hokuto gone, and there's a couple other wrestlers out doing interpromotional work or healing up injuries or what have you, this roster is kind of toast and small heading into 1994. Kind of talked about this a lot over the course of 92 and 93, where the rookies are tough to come by. There's more competition out there with LLPW and JWP, but the influx of talent isn't the same. They're still running an incredibly rough and long schedule going place to place. They're beaten up. They're beaten up. They're hanging on. And the roster's very much small. So they're kind of having their hands forced where they think, okay, we got to meet a certain time standard for kind of these big shows. And they don't really have the roster to do that, so they make up for that with the longer matches. It's not the best strategy, especially when you get something like this Bull Nakano Kyoko Inoue match where, my God, yes, Bull is very much still over. Kyoko has really taken a step back in 93 in terms of her star power. So that leads you to believe that Bull Nakano should get a pretty easy victory over Kyoko Inoue, unless, because Bull is kind of set to leave at some point in time, I don't think it was announced that she was joining WWF, but it's very much clear that she still is going to take a reduced schedule further in 94 for AJW. There was speculation that this was going to be a big time match for Kyoko Inoue to beat Bull Nakano decisively. That was a big speculation at the time, as I was kind of reading through old boards and rumors and stuff of that era. But what we do have is something interesting that I was able to find, that with the turn of the calendar and budgetary kind of reasonings, with a very successful financial last couple of years of AJW, a lot of the wrestlers got big pay increases. And AJW itself was able to rebudget and have a big budget increase themselves. So you'll see a lot more upgraded gear here for a lot of the wrestlers. They're kind of in a little bit better shape than they have been the last couple of years, simply because some people pointed to they got some trainers involved to kind of help them with injuries and better workout schedules. They still have their dojo with the dorm situation and their big cafeteria. Well, I read that there was a budget increase, that they hired their own like chef instead of a more catering type a setup for food. Now they have kind of essentially look at this chef as a nutritionist. Very interesting kind of tidbits that I was reading here with the turn of the calendar in 94. Good use of money, I would say. This is a very good use of money to help out the wrestlers, and something that when Stardom got a big increase, what did you see? Better gear. You saw a lot of the wrestlers getting in way better shape. They have their own dojo where they can train. Very, very similar mindset here. And kind of who is involved in both companies in that era and this one in the modern times? Well, that's Ross Yogawa. Am I pointing that he is the sole reason behind this? But no. However, he was there and he clearly learned and saw what worked. And he is the booker, at least, of this time frame for AJW. It doesn't shock me that he took something very important, which is wrestlers' health and training, as something that's very, very important for wrestlers to develop. The technology, I haven't seen much difference there, but if you're watching the classics, you'll see kind of a... Near the end of 93, you see a format change in how the classics start presenting these AJW shows. We're starting to see more shows make tape. So I look at that as a record retention with their budget increase as well. That's my interpretation. But back to Bull Nakano, Kyoko Inoue, where it goes, almost 27 minutes, I found this match very boring for the majority of the time. It's a very much stalemate, back and forth. We constantly see this with these two. It's not very exciting at all. There is a difference, though, with Kyoko Inoue compared to what we've seen of her matches with Bull Nakano in the past, is when we see Kyoko situate herself in these luchador submission holds, like the surfboard. Now she's actually able to get Bull Nakano up into these wacky positions. Is that because she's stronger and better? I think that's a little part of it, but I think the bigger part is that Bull Nakano is half the size she used to be and a little bit more flexible and limber. So they're able to work, you know, these factors definitely work in their favor, and they're able to do a lot more of these things. Kyoko gets the big swing off. There's martial arts, move sets that we're starting to see. There's a lot of running of Kyoko in this match, while Bull, she kind of tries to match her in speed a little bit with a couple dives. She even does her mid rope like flash kick, which is pretty cool. Very much signaling the Niagara driver a lot from Kyoko Inoue near the end of the match. And when we get to this kind of final stretch of 5 to 7 minutes, the match does pick up significantly. So that's good. And there's a very rad moment where Bull is, let's see, I think there's a table bump on the outside. There's a kind of powerbomb combo with a guillotine attempt. Kyoko hits a big German on Bull Nakano with the bridge. She finally hits the Niagara driver. Bull Nakano kicks out of two, and this really just staggers Kyoko for a good, you know, few seconds, where she just can't fathom someone kicking out of her best move. And Kyoko getting the big bull up for that move was very impressive. She tries, let's see. Bull kind of senses, let's see, I'm reading my notes here. Kyoko whips in the corner. She tries the big elbow drop, gets another German off. Let's see, there's another Niagara driver attempt, and Bull Nakano essentially reverses this into a leg drop, I guess it'd be the, like, Billy Gunn Famasser, and then that kind of signals Bull Nakano to finish this off. I think the match was pretty slow and boring for the most part, but a hot finish left me satisfied. I would have liked to see Kyoko win. I would have liked to see that. Bull is still very protected, obviously, probably to the point where it's now I'm questioning if it's helping their roster out. Constantly see, I guess, in their universe, more or less a part-timer, just continuing to beat their roster. You can kind of point to some things in the modern era that you can compare to for those kind of aspects of wrestling. So yeah, Bull wins. There's a lot of finisher kickouts. There's a lot of rest holds in the middle, but I thought that finish was very strong. Let's see here. This particular match does not have enough votes on Cage Match. I would imagine they have it kind of at a 7 or 8 situation. Yeah, it's got a 7. Okay, I think that's totally fair for the match. Now, one match I think is pretty overrated, and that's this next one. That's this 3WA tag title match. It's Manami Toyota and Yamada taking on LCO, Mita, and Shimoda with Akira Hokuto looking on from the outside. And this is, I'm going to point this out as Mita and Shimoda's first major match. Like, big stakes on the line, got them to level up, and I don't think they should have won this one. But it was, like, they started hitting a lot of their now-known signature moves, where it's kind of the Mita assisting Shimoda to do a springboard plancha, and then Mita follows that up with a big crossbody suicide dive a la Mayu Iwatani in this era. And Yamada and Toyota, we kind of know their deal right at this point in time. But the 2 out of 3 falls match, I found it extremely long and extremely slow for a lot of it, despite the fact that Manami Toyota was in this. It's, I can't say it reminds me a lot of the Jumping Bomb Angels and their matches. It really more reminds me of like a Fire Jets Marine Wolves match without the high pace. That's an AJW 80s reference for you guys. Basically, what I mean is, in the 80s, these tag matches were run, hit a lot of Germans. And maybe some top rope splashes. And that's not what we got here. We got a lot of Yamada kicking, like, early Hota. We got Toyota kind of in the Yamazaki role from Jumping Bomb Angels. While Mita and Shimoda were working very much like, I don't want to say dudes, but that is the style change that we're kind of seeing through some of these wrestlers. Like, you know, we're really getting away from that 80s style of go, go, go. And we're more or less getting to, you know, Mita's hitting Death Valley drivers that she's finally developed. Shimoda's doing a lot of bridges and kicks. Like boots and whatnot. I would say Manami Toyota was the standout in the match simply because she just kind of picks up the pace through a lot of these things and is willing to take falls and is willing to really try to put on the best performance of the group. And I believe all of the people involved in this match debuted in 87. I believe that's true. The first fall comes at almost 13 minutes into this sucker, so you know you're in for a long one unless they do a quick fall too. Not the case. We get a couple ocean suplex attempts. Mita doubles over into a victory roll Shimoda, or from Shimoda on Toyota. God, they kind of rhyme together if you keep saying it. And Yamada is dealing with Mita on the outside, and what happens is Manami finally hits the Cyclone Suplex, not the JOC, to get the first fall. So, big finisher instead of like what you'd see out of Mexico, where a roll-up might get fall one, or compared to those JWP matches where Kansai will hit the Kansai bomb like right away in a match and just put someone away with a heavy power bomb. there is a short period of time where Shimoda's selling like she's got KO'd, which is pretty cool. And that kind of puts Mita on the back end and defense of it all. So the crowd is slowly starting to cheer LCO due to the match format. And with 2-on-1, that certainly helps them out. So they are accomplishing getting LCO over as bigger acts than what they've been the last couple years, kind of shadowing Hokuto. And being out of the Hokuto shadow does allow them to shine brighter, because they're not going to be seen as just lackeys, not as good as their leader situation. Fall 2 takes another 10 minutes, so we're 23 minutes into the match, I think. Yeah, we're about 23 minutes into the match now. It ends with Mita hitting multiple Death Valley drivers to get the second fall, and I believe it was on Yamada, so Toyota does not get pinned. No. That is right, because yeah, Mita hits a DVD on Yamada, and then she hits like two in a row on Minami, and I believe she caught her on one, and that's how they got the second fall. That really kicked the crowd into a higher gear. But the third fall went another 13 minutes, so it just kept going. You got essentially three full matches in this thing. And I would say it wasn't until about the last 5 minutes into the entirety of the match where the pace picked up again. I thought they were clearly kind of running out of ideas, especially at the beginning of the third fall. It was a lot of catching their breath, conserving their energy again until they could get a hot finish. And Minami hits one JOC. It's the pin's broken up, and then she does eventually hit a second one, which is, I think, broken up again. So you see my point of they're running out of ideas. When she goes for, I think it's a third one, this move is countered. And Mita hits, I believe, the Gory Bomb, of all things, as I am battling my cat, trying to get him to not run into the microphone. Get out of here. Come on. Out of there. And he's going to jump right up. You stay away, buddy. Yeah, come over this way. Okay, here we go. Let's see. There is a missile dropkick, suicide dive to the outside. I believe that was from Yamada, of all people. And that leads her to come back in to hit the missile dropkick JOC combo on Mita for the pin. I think a lot of people will come away with this and think, my God, this is the best any of these people can do. I don't think so. I think this match was way too long. It was way too slow in parts. Going almost 40 minutes, it was certainly exhausting for the format and how they worked. Even though I think the finishing stretches of those last couple minutes of each pin were good, it just took too long to get there. I found myself kind of fading in and out of it. I didn't really see it as exciting, especially now that we have a lot of different tag matches to compare to, whether it's interpromotional or not. LCO just isn't at that level yet. They're almost there, but, you know, I'd probably go like a 3.5 Big Dave Star kind of scale, maybe a little bit higher. It's we don't know the LCO formula yet. We don't know how good they're going to be yet at this point in time. Yamada and Toyota, after their huge matches of 93, this felt like a step down. Is this going to be a better match in time? Will different teammates of Toyota or Yamada make the difference and to get that spark back? Yeah, probably. That's kind of where we are now. It's not my favorite, to put it that way. And then we get to the main event. It's Hota against Kong, 3WA title. I have never seen this match, but I've heard the stories. And I didn't realize it was this one I was heading into. And for Kong to take a rare pinfall earlier in the month was really trying to get across that Yumika Hota push and to get her credibility of her being in a main event when she's been absent from it for so long. They tried Hota in a big spot last year. I believe that was the Kansai match. Was that for the JWP title? Might have been. And here we are. It's Hota Kong. They're both in red in this match. And unintentionally becomes known as the bloody hand match. Okay? And Aja gets heat because of this. And she's finally... This was the first sign that Aja Kong is that woman. You know, and she's finally getting it. She's not in anybody's shadow. She is at the top. She needs to... It's what a lot of critics and fans say. It's like, grab it by the horns. You know, take this match into your world and bring everyone else in it. And Aja Kong did a phenomenal job in taking advantage of something and making it special. And they also had the right format to this match to really keep a lot of energy and heat. So they start this match with just kicking the shit out of each other. It very much reminds me of a kind of mid to late 80s Chigusa Nagayo match with more, I would say, better striking, because Hota, I think, is a better striker than Chigusa, but with half the charisma, if that's even being generous. So they both do kind of these tease knockout blows to start off the match. They brawl outside real quick. They're doing pile drivers through tables and shit. It's high energy. It's awesome. They get back in the ring and Kong's trying back fists. She's doing kidney shots. And we get Hota early doing like E Honda Street Fighter style pumping palm strikes to Aja Kong's face. And they're just taking it. And it's really wild. And then all of a sudden, Kong knocks her down. And Hota's hand is just like ripped open. And what happened is, now if you've seen Aja Kong, she don't got no teeth, guys. And she's losing them at each and every match and probably taking shoot palm strikes to the face. Doesn't help, because my God, this, like, when people say, oh, a match is stiff, watch something like this. And then that'll be like, those are kind of tame compared. Because this one, Kong has like half her teeth knocked out. They're very sharp from the ones that are left behind. She's got like one tooth on the bottom or, you know, whatever. And as Hota's hitting these fucking palm strikes, the center of her hand just gets cut from Kong's mouth. And Kong gets her kind of on the ground and she's locking in holds on Hota. And Hota is now smearing her bloody hand all over Kong's, like, arm and face. So if you're watching this for the first time, you might think, like I did, where it's like, oh shit, is Kong busted open from those palm strikes? And Hota's hand is just, like, taking off the blood from her face, while, in fact, it's the complete opposite. It's big-time kill shots. They keep trying against each other. Kong is... like, showing the hand. She's doing, like, arm bar stretches and trying to make this hand bleed more and more and more. And the crowd's seeing now, oh, it's Hota who's bleeding. And as she's on the ground, she gets it kind of taped up a little bit, and Kong's not giving her any time to rest. She starts just kicking her in the back and the side, and she's stomping the hand, and the crowd is booing. Phenomenal work. And it becomes this just targeted beatdown of Hota and really build the match up for a big Hota comeback. And it's really wild. There's Kong like stomping more on Hota. The fans are booing her again and she starts giving her the finger. There's like actual bloody handprints being left on the mat. Very, very cool. we start getting suplex changes. We're getting Hota coming back. She just can't hit the pyramid driver, which is that straight jacket. Yeah, the pyramid driver. It's like a straight jacket, tiger driver, like 97 situation there. And they just keep teasing it. And finally, there's a bunch of rolling kicks that Hota stinks at doing, but she manages to hit one of them. And they're really wanting to go to the top to finish each other off, because no matter how many times, like, Hota goes for a rolling kick and Aja Kong counters it with a massive Hurricane backfist, you just get all the trademark, like, near falls, and the crowd's going nuts. So this was awesome. And finally, they get to the top, top of the turnbuckle, and Hota's teasing a pyramid driver. Like, that's all she's got left. Because just like a couple moves earlier, there's another pyramid driver attack, and Aja kind of rolls out of it and misses an Hurricane into a backdrop driver, in which Hota follows that up, I believe, with an Hurricane of her own for a near fall. Then they get to the top rope. So there's the setup. Signals for the pyramid driver, and as they go for it in the motion, Aja counters it into her, and I finally found the name for this, and it's called the Super Mountain Bomb, or otherwise known as the Kansai Killer, where it's that backdrop. Do I have the names messed up? Ah, whatever. Point is, the pyramid driver is reversed into the not Canadian destroyer. It's like Aja Kong's cute version. And then just pins this woman. Very cool match. It's easily the best Yumiko Hota match I've ever seen in my life. I don't think I'll ever see anything better. And do I say it's also, at this point in time, Aja Kong's best match to date? I think it is. You know, her Bull Nakano matches, while famous and pretty good, they never reached this height. Certainly the match where she won the title didn't reach this height of kind of match. And I thought the build to Hota, even on a month's notice, did pretty well to get her across. We know what Hota's about at this time, so they didn't really need to do much to do it. But the bloody hand, Kong kind of doing a heel group and working Hota into it, I thought it was great. I'm not going like 5 stars or kind of close to that, but I'm thinking like 4.5 Big Dave star situation. On Cage Match, it's got a 9.33, so it's kind of in that same, it's in that same realm that I just said. Very, very good match. 1994 is off to a phenomenal start, establishing new people at the top, and they need to do that. So they didn't waste any time with Hokuto on the way out. Hokuto, more or less, kind of did her job in getting various people over. Being that she was such a huge star, and she got the biggest push of her career in the last 3 years, and she's injured, I can't really see a situation where, unless she'd come back for those one-offs, and for her to have kind of a one-off match and put someone over, that she did pretty much all she could do in booking-wise, short of winning the title, like the 3WA title. That's my 2 cents on there. So that was AJW. We're on our journey forward still. Let's see. The next big match, I think it's the February 18th show in Fukuoka, if I can get a hold of that. And then I believe it's going to be a Corken Hall show at the end of February. And if I can't find that, then I guess we'll go straight to March, which is St. Battles Day. Hopefully I can find some shows in February and we can get on track there. I believe we can go from there. If you've enjoyed this content at AJW Destiny, Consider signing up for the Patreon, patreon.com/redleafretrocast, where you can get more Journey of the Joshi in the 2010s, Out of the Dark Ages, and LLPW. We're kind of nearing the end of 1994 for that promotion, and we're about a year ahead schedule on that, but I have a feeling that AJW is going to catch up pretty damn soon, and we'll go on there. I just did a review over the famous Aja Kong, Shinobu Kandori chain match. Actually, that's in the July 94. So we're going to catch up to that pretty damn quick here. That is one of my favorite women's matches of all time. I rated it very, very highly. I was very excited. Talked a lot about that over on the Patreon. Go check that out. And that will do it.